and they go on, and instead of becoming half negative, the first becomes wholly negative, and the second wholly positive. In our ordinary household current, in England for example, the current changes its polarity 50 times a second, from negative to positive and positive to negative. In other parts of the world, such as Canada and the United States, the frequency of change is 60 times a second. Upon this form of existence known as the world, the solar system, and the universe, have a cycle system of our own. There we travel along the stream of time just as electrons travel. 51. The electric stream. We travel along our conception of time until we reach, or our over-self reaches, some much greater existence. If you will refer to Wisdom of the Ancients written by me, you will find that one different time cycle is 72,000 years. Everyone and everything on Earth has a counterpart of the opposite polarity on another Earth, in another galaxy, in another system of time altogether. Obviously that system cannot be close to us, or there would be such a tremendous explosion that the whole Earth, and many other worlds as well, would be destroyed. That the great earth-shaking explosion which occurred on June 30, 1908, in the wastes of Siberia was caused by a piece of antimatter much smaller than a football which had somehow got into our atmosphere. Truly tremendous speed, and as it slammed into the earth this piece of antimatter, much smaller than a football, exploded with a noise which was heard more than 500 miles away. As away were thrown off their feet with the blast and shock. If a larger piece of antimatter came, there would be no longer an earth, in just the same way as a spark can weld contacts together and so cause a short and complete failure of an electric system, so would a larger piece of antimatter have caused complete failure to us. We, then, in our present cycle and on our present world, are of the negative cycle. Thus we have frustration, bitterness, where the predominant force is evil. Take heart from the fact that this particular cycle is coming to a close, and in the years to come a fresh cycle will start in which conditions will become more and more positive, where we shall no longer be under the domination of anti-God, where no longer shall there be wars, but where all shall be good. For just as now we have wars against each other, in the cycle to come the only wars shall be against poverty and illness, and against evil itself. We will find that we have what can be termed heaven on earth, and overselves everywhere will be sending their puppets to what then shall be the positive world as well as to the negative world. Suppose you consider Alice in Wonderland. Think of Alice going through the mirror into a world where everything was reversed. Could suddenly pass through the veil separating the negative and positive, supposing that here, on this world, you were wondering how you could pay your bills, wondering how you were going to afford to keep going, and wondering why your neighbor disliked you so much. Expectedly you were pushed through the veil, you would find you had no bills, people were kind, you had time to help other people instead of thinking about yourself all the time. It is going to come, inevitably, it always comes, and each time there is a reversal of cycle we learn a little more. It is an interesting thought that if we could catch a lump of antimatter about the size of a pea, and we could shield it somehow from the Earth's influence, we could harness it to a vast spaceship, and then by exposing just a little to the Earth's influence that particle, no larger than a pea, would propel the spaceship upwards beyond this world, and out into deep, deep space. Would then be no need for rockets or other forms of propulsion, because that small piece of antimatter, under proper control, would provide complete anti-gravity matter. Again, there cannot be good without evil, because no force would exist to have a magnet which is all positive or all negative, because no force would exist. A magnet would not exist either. Let's imagine that the world is just a form of magnet with magnetic fields which radiate from the Arctic and the Antarctic, but connected to us by some bridge that we cannot see as another world of the opposite polarity. Then we would have the two poles of, for instance, a horseshoe magnet. Any scientists are wondering if antimatter means that every single thing is duplicated on this other world. They wonder, for instance, if there are anti-people, anti-cats, and anti-dogs. Do not know what these people are like, because scientists are people of little or no imagination. They have to have a thing in their hands so that they can dissect it or weigh it. It takes an occultist to give information on this particular subject, because the competent occultist can leave the body and get out of the body, and out of the earth, as well, And once out of the earth he can see what this other world is like, as I have done so very, very frequently. People whose etheric direction is different from that of people on this, the world of earth. They may, purely by way of illustration, have a yellowish and blue shell to the aura instead of a blue and yellow shell as here. And it difficult to visualize the world of antimatter, consider in photography, we have a negative and we have a pose. 53. And if we shine a light through the negative under sensitized paper and dip the stuff in various chemicals, we get a dark patch where there was a light patch on the negative, and a light patch where there was a dark patch on the negative. An unknown flying objects, let us call them flying saucers, which come to this earth actually from the world of antimatter, cannot come too close or they would explode, but they are exploring just the same as we send a rocket to the moon, or to Mars, or to Venus. People complained that if there was anything in this flying saucer business, the people aboard would land or would make contact with people upon this earth. All truth of the matter is that they cannot, because if they touch down, there is an explosion and no longer a flying saucer. Consider various reports. You will remember that there have been incidents when some unknown flying object, which was very clearly seen on radar, suddenly exploded most violently as it came within 1,000 feet or so of the surface of this world, exploded so violently that no trace could be found. And if we could send a rocket to the world of antimatter, we should annoy the inhabitants considerably by perhaps blowing a city right off their map. Other aspects of this world of antimatter which are exceedingly interesting to those who have studied the matter thoroughly. Certain locations, fortunately but few, on this world of ours where people can slip through into another dimension, or into the world of antimatter, will move to such a location which oscillates slightly, and if they are unlucky they are transferred completely from our earth. It is a matter which has been proved time and time again. Beyond the Shetland Islands in a very cold sea there is a mysterious island called Delta Methuli, the last land. Happenings have occurred in the vicinity of that island and actually upon it. A British Admiralty report of many years ago wherein it is stated that a party of British seamen landed on Delta Methuli, and their most peculiar things happened to them, and people appeared. People who were quite different from British sailors. Eventually the British sailors returned to their ship, a British battleship, by the way, considerably shaken by their unnerving experiences. Delta Methuli whole ship's crews have dis. 54. Seen again. There is off the American coast a place which has been known as the Triangle of Death. It is an area in the Atlantic Ocean where ships, and even fast flying aircraft, have disappeared. Would you like to check on some of this? Here is a start. On February 2, 1963, a tanker called Marine Sulphur Queen left Beaumont in the state of Texas. Ship was bound for Norfolk in Virginia. A ship left on February 2, and was in routine radio communication with land radio stations until February 4, when she was stated to be near a certain area of land in the Gulf of Mexico. And no more was heard of the ship. The ship was presumed lost. Planes took off to patrol the area. Coast Guard cutters teamed crisscross patterns, and all ships in the area were asked to report any unusual wreckage, which continued until February 14, without any trace whatever of anything from the tanker. Not only ships have been lost, in August 1963 two large four-engine tanker planes left an Air Force base south of Miami. 11 men aboard the planes were to be engaged in ordinary refueling operations. Just an ordinary matter of training in refueling. During the flight the planes radioed their position as 800 miles north of Miami and 300 miles west of Bermuda, but that was the last heard from them. They reported their position and vanished to be seen no more. New planes with highly trained crews. The planes at all, they had just radioed their position, and then they vanished. Imagine the search which followed. Aircraft went out and literally combed the area, some flying high so that they could see over the widest possible part of the sea, others flying low in the hope of spotting something of the two planes, and took up the search, but nothing whatever was ever found. No planes, no wreckage, no bodies, nothing. Throughout years there have been reports of the mysterious disappearance of ships. Ships lost without trace, lost without even a matchstick of wreckage to show that they existed. Never have there been the facilities for quick search by fast radar equipped aircraft as at present, and no matter how one searches, No matter the means one employs, there is still no trace of what happened. 55. Bermuda, Florida coastline where many ships have disappeared, and many aircraft, too, have disappeared. It's a lonely area because the whole of the coastline is patrolled by coast guards, by the Navy, and by the Air Force. The list of disappearances goes back to the first part of recorded history. Ago I became acquainted with the most mysterious area in the Pacific, south of Japan. Here there was a region known as the Devil's Sea where a ship, usually a junk, could sail along its peaceful way and then completely vanish before the startled eyes of people in other junks nearby. On one occasion a line of fishing junks were sailing out over the Devil's Sea. The leading junk was perhaps a mile away from the next. Sailed on, and suddenly vanished without the slightest trace. The helmsman in the second junk was so paralyzed with fright that he had no time or thought to alter course, and his junk sailed on over the course of the other and nothing happened to it. All the crews later reported a curious shimmer in the air above them, and a sensation which they said was oppressive and heavy like that often occurring before a very strong tornado. Here is something that the skeptical among you could check. On December 5, 1945, five torpedo bombers took off from the naval station at Fort Lauderdale in the state of Florida. Peaceful, sunny day, without clouds. The water was placid, there were no storms, nothing at all to give one thought that a great mystery was about to occur. Five bombers were going out on an absolutely routine flight during which time they should be within visual sight of the American coastline or some of the Caribbean islands. At no time, considering the height at which they would fly, should they be out of sight of land. Every bomber had been carefully checked and every fuel tank was completely full. Every engine was at its best condition, as was certified by the pilots who had to sign examination sheets before taking off. Every plane had a self-inflating life raft, and each man wore his own life jacket, life jackets which would keep a man afloat for days. The crew numbered 14, and every man had more than a year's experience of flying. They all thought they were going for an ordinary pleasurable flight up into the blue sky, watching the jewels of islands which were the Caribbean islands, and watching the 56. Long, long coastline of Florida. Ups, too. Some of them hoped to get another look down at the Everglades, but they took off carrying out their ordinary routine patrol. They were going to fly east for 160 miles and north for 40 miles, after which they would head back to the air station, which they would reach 2 hours after takeoff. Time after takeoff, about an hour and a half, a message was received at the Fort Lauderdale station, and it was a strange message indeed. It was a message of emergency. Light was agitated, even frightened. He said they all seemed to be off course, and he said also that they could not see land. Strange occurrence that he found it necessary to repeat it. Repeat, we cannot see land. As usual in such a case, the radio operator on duty at the air station sent a message to the flight of planes asking what was their position. Reply completely shattered the composure of the men in the airport control towers. Reply, we are not sure of our position, we do not know where we are. Yet they were flying in ideal conditions, every man was completely experienced and their aircraft were excellent. Further message was received, a highly alarmed voice called through the speakers. We don't know which way is west, said the voice. Everything is wrong, everything is strange, we cannot be sure of any direction. Even the sea doesn't look as it should. Can you imagine an experienced man accompanied by 13 other men being able to say the compass did not indicate correctly, they did not know where they were, they could not see one end and even the sea looked different? And yet, also, the sun which was shining on the air station was invisible to the 14 men flying in a cloudless sky. They could not see the sun and the sea looked different. 30 p.m. of that same day another flight leader spoke by radio, and said that he did not know where they were. Continued, it looks as if we are, and then the message ended. No further contact was ever made, no trace was ever found of these 14 men, nor of the planes in which they flew, no wreckage, nothing. Within minutes one of the American Navy's largest flying boats, with complete equipment for survival and rescue, roared off the water carrying a crew of 13 men. A boat, nearly 80 feet long and with a wingspan of 125 feet, was built. 58. to withstand the roughest landings at sea. One would have called such a flying boat invincible and invulnerable. During the flying boat's journey out to the imagined position of the torpedo bombers, it sent out routine reports, but after 20 minutes all radio contact stopped and nothing whatever was ever heard again about the torpedo bombers nor about the huge, specially equipped, specially manned flying boat which had gone to their rescue. The Air Force, everyone, went out in a hurried search for wreckage, for men floating in life jackets or in self-inflating lifeboats. But nothing was ever found. An aircraft carrier moved into the area and 30 planes took off at first light to search the whole area. The RAF, who happened to be nearby, sent every one of their available planes into the air to search. Never has there been the slightest piece of wreckage, and it is clear that all these planes just disappeared and threw a hole in time into the world of antimatter, just as throughout the ages ships and men and women, and animals too, have vanished without trace. These incidents are not just isolated incidents that happened recently, they have happened throughout history, and if one digs deep enough one can find various highly interesting accounts of sudden disappearances. Well documented case of a boy who went out of his father's farmhouse one evening to get water from the well. There was snow upon the ground, just a few inches of it, and the boy was anxious to get back to the fire. So he started out with a pail in each hand. His parents and some visiting friends sat by the side of the fire and waited for him because they wanted the water with which to make tea. At time the mother got restless and wondered whatever was keeping the boy. But knowing how boys dawdle, she was not alarmed until almost an hour had passed. Then some strange feeling came over them and they took lanterns and went out in search of the boy, thinking that perhaps he had fallen into the well. Them shedding light upon the snow, they could follow his footsteps halfway across the field. Then, the father in the lead stopped with such horrified astonishment that those following bumped into him. He moved aside and pointed dumbly. The others looked in the snow, and there they found clear imprints of the boy's footsteps and then no imprints anymore. The boy had vanished as if he had suddenly been drawn straight up into the air, went in a straight line, and then they were no more. He has not been seen since. Full daylight, he went out into a field watched by his wife and the local sheriff, in the United States, to get something for the sheriff from the field, and in view of these people he just vanished into thin air and was never seen again. You have access to Reynolds News? If you do, you might like to consult the issue of August 14, 1938, Pact. But the plane just vanished and no trace of it has been found. Is another one, in the year 1952 in the month of March, Wing Commander Baldwin of the RAF was flying with a patrol of planes along the Korean coast. His companions were all flying new jet planes. He flew into a cloud. His companions did not. Returned to base eventually, but Commander Baldwin did not. There was no trace of him and no trace of his plane, and none of his companions could say what happened to him. There are many, many such cases. In 1947, an American superfortress just disappeared without any trace and without any wreckage. It was flying in that triangle near Bermuda. This superfortress, a very large plane, just vanished, and although a really intensive search was mounted, no trace was found. You remember the case of the British South American Airways plane, Star Tiger? It was 1948. The month was January. Well, almost February, because it was January 30th. Radioed the airport at Kindley Field, Bermuda, that it was approximately 400 miles from the island. The radio operator stated that the weather was excellent and the plane was performing exactly as it should. Operator added that they expected to stay schedule. Did not. The six members of the crew and 24 passengers disappeared, and again, in spite of a most thorough search, nothing was ever found. 50 planes of various types flew low over the area, but nothing was found. An investigation based on all available evidence. These are things are thoroughly investigated because of the insurance at Lloyd's of London, but the only verdict the investigators could bring in was lost, cause unknown. Another, 1948, a big airliner going from San Juan Airport towards Florida. More than 30 passengers, And when the radio operator got in touch with his station, he said that everything was going well and the passengers were all singing. 15 a.m. The radio operator contacted Miami Control Tower, stating that they were 50 miles out and were in sight of the field. He asked for landing instructions. Thing vanished without trace, and no trace has ever been found. The investigators confirmed that the captain and crew were highly experienced, and yet, less than 50 miles from their destination, a great plane vanished without the slightest trace. Just one more, we have to mention this one because it is a sister of the Star Tiger. But this later one was called the Ariel. In touch with Bermuda and then passed on en route to Kingston, Jamaica. But at 8:25 there was a message which stated that the plane was 175 miles from Bermuda and that everything was well and he was changing to the radio station at Kingston. But that was the last heard. The plane vanished without trace. The United States Navy were in the vicinity of Bermuda, carrying out maneuvers. Navy and the Air Force, too, had had enough of these mysteries, so they bent every possible effort to solving the mystery. Aircraft carriers put every one of their planes in the air. In addition, there were light cruisers and destroyers, together with minesweepers and all manner of pinnacles. But although every square foot of water was covered, no trace was found, nothing at all. The explanation is that there is a split in time through which infrequently people go from one world to another. If you imagine two large footballs rotating close together, and each football has a small split in it, you can see that if for some reason the two split areas came into close proximity, an unhappy little flea on one football could just jump straight into the split of the other football. Perhaps there is a similar state of affairs between this world and the opposite world. Remember this? Here we are in a three-dimensional world. We imagine that in our little box-like rooms we are quite safe and nothing can touch us. But supposing a four-dimensional person looked down at us, then possibly for him a ceiling or a wall would not exist, and so he could reach down and pick us up. It might be a good idea if we have a chapter devoted to dimensions, the fourth dimension, for example. What do you think? Shall we do it? A very useful thing if we understand it properly. 62. 4. Many dimensions too. It seems rather appropriate to deal with the fourth dimension in the fourth chapter, because when we leave this earth we all go into the fourth dimension. An interesting point here: people who attend seances are often upset at the garbled messages they receive from those who have passed over. That the person who has left this earth or another plane of existence is what we might term thousands of light years in the future. We'll find an interesting parallel later in this chapter when we deal with the Hindu king and his daughter. But first, what is a one-dimensional world? Stand what four dimensions are unless we understand what one is. Suppose we have a piece of paper and a pencil. Let us draw on the paper a straight line, and let us imagine that all the carbon from the pencil represents people, so that in effect the straight line is a whole universe. Be two points for the people, one is straight ahead and the other is straight behind. They will be able to move backwards or forwards, and in no other way at all. Could change in that line, then the one-dimensional people would think that a miracle had occurred, or if they saw the point of your pencil just lightly pressing on the paper, they would think that a flying saucer had suddenly appeared. You, as a three-dimensional creature, will have temporarily entered a one-dimensional world to rest the point of your pencil on the paper, and the one-dimensional being who saw that pencil point will be sure that a most unusual happening has occurred. Being one-dimensional, he would not be able to see you but only that point of the pencil in contact with the paper. Having some idea of what a one-dimensional world is, let us have a look at a two-dimensional world. This will be a flat plane, and the people who live upon such a world will necessarily be flat geometrical figures. The world in which they exist will be to them much the same as our world, except that if lines around them, they will become aware of these as great walls preventing them from going beyond those encompassing lines, and they will probably decide that the lines they encounter must exist somewhere else. They will think of the third dimension in much the same way as we think of the fourth dimension, in much the same way as we sometimes have difficulty comprehending the fourth dimension. So will these two-dimensional people have the greatest difficulty in comprehending that third dimension which to us is so commonplace. In fact, if anything does stir their consciousness about a third dimension, and if they are foolish enough to talk to anyone else about it, they would be put away as lunatics and regarded as liars, phonies, hoaxes, or similar lines. They cannot be perceived by this person because, being a two-dimensional person, he will not be able to look from above. If only scientists were not so difficult. Side all their preconceived notions and enter research with an absolutely unbiased outlook. The fact that big names have too much say in everyday affairs. Man had some success as a general in a war, so he is immediately made into President of the United States. Actor who pretends that he is a lady killer on the screen. Hopeless in that department. But anyway, he had some success on the screen, so we immediately become inundated with photographic comments from the fellow, telling us how we should brush our teeth, how we should cut our hair, what sort of shavers we should use, and possibly helpful hints on a love life which this person could not possibly enjoy. It follows, then, that one of the biggest difficulties, one of the biggest drawbacks, which we metaphysicians have to face is that people blindly follow the words of those who should know about such things, but probably do not. People such as Einstein or Rutherford, or those of similar standing. Men are specialists in a particularly narrow field of science. They have the scientific outlook and they want to analyze everything according to mundane, outmoded concepts and physical laws which daily are being contradicted. Take the word of eminent scientists as gospel. They take the words of film stars as gospel also, and unfortunately the gospel cannot be disputed and cannot be XT4 varied. A problem is to delve into truths which some eminent people have strenuously attempted to conceal. Fundamental laws should be regarded as fundamental, as being valid during the present state of knowledge, but such laws must be sufficiently flexible that they can be altered, amended, or even scrapped in the light of increasing knowledge. As remind you of the bumblebee flight, the laws of aerodynamics, the bumblebee cannot possibly fly because the poor creature's structure completely defies all known laws of aerodynamics. If we believe that the bumblebee cannot fly, they, reputable scientists, basing their statements on the laws of physics, have said that man would never travel at more than 30 miles an hour because his blood system would break down under the strain, his heart would burst, his brain would collapse, etc., etc. Well, according to recent reports, man can travel at more than 30 miles an hour. Accomplished that, the scientists said man would never fly, it was impossible. With that overcome, they said that man would never fly faster than sound. Never mind. Undaunted, they said that man would never leave the Earth and go into space. To rumors, this has been done. Going back a bit farther, to somewhere about 1910, all the wise men and pundits of science said that no man would send his voice across the Atlantic, but a gentleman by the name of Marconi proved that statement wrong, and now we send not merely voices but pictures across the Atlantic. Possibly that is not much of an advantage, having due regard to the present-day state of television programs. Being got over to you, more or less, the idea that established scientists with their stereotyped, hidebound, immovable laws can be wrong. Let us go a little farther. One of their fallacies is that statement that two solids cannot occupy the same space at the same time. That is absurd, that is completely incorrect. For in the science of metaphysics, two bodies can occupy the same space at the same time by a process known as interpenetration. I've shown that everything that exists is composed of atoms with great spaces between them, in much the same way as when we look up at the stars on a clear night we can see little dots which are worlds, and great black spaces. 65. Which is space. It follows, then, that if we have a creature small to stretch your imagination here, to look at what to us is a solid, that creature may be able to see not a solid as we do, but all the particles composing the solid. Enter that creature, looking at our solid, the view will be similar to that which we see when we look at the heavens on a clear night. Mind you, that is much space with just a few little pinpoints of light. Supposing that there was a being large enough so that in looking at our universe he would see that universe as a solid of the scale, think of a virus. If you could catch a virus of a special type, you could drop that single virus into a porcelain cup and the poor creature would fall right through, would fall right through the bottom without touching anything on the way because it is such a small thing. Not imagination but fact. You may be aware that one of the big difficulties in catching a virus in a laboratory is that the things just go through the ceramic filters much the same as a dog can run wild on a moor. To a creature small enough, the spaces between atoms in a solid are as great in comparison as those between the stars in our universe. And just as whole showers of meteorites or comets or spaceships can travel the empty spaces between the worlds, so can other objects occupy that which we term a solid object.